So let's see, in the past 2 weeks, we begin our lecture by, well, getting freedom and equation of, out of the FLRW metric. That's just the tools we have been using to study the universe evolution. And along the way, we find some important error. We have chosen to go back in time. And first thing we wondered about is that we realize we're living in an accelerating reading universe today, which tells us there has to be something mysterious called a dark energy. Normally is thinking, we just think it's a cosmology constant, which agrees with the observation very well. And then the next thing we studied is called a structure formation. Important thing is it only grows if it's matter dominated. Then we're like, oh crap, we don't have enough matter. Actually, the most important thing is our matter, the matter we know as ourself, or whatever is made of ourselves, interact with photons. So the structure formation doesn't grow until photon decouple, and that was too late. So from that, we are convinced, well, last Friday, we also convinced that in gazillion other ways that some mysterious non-bionic dark matter must exist. And we go further back in time, which is into the thermodynamics. What we first look at is exactly the photon decoupling, which happens at CMB, and which says, which is observed and measured to very many digits. And it says that, interestingly, it's, if you look at it very carefully, it's basically extremely homogeneous, but not completely homogeneous. And from this result, I have hand waved and pointing to some peaks. And it says those peaks tell us omega bar m is about 0.05. So this is a fraction of the matter. You know, we are made of baryons, so it's very interesting to know how many percentage of the universe is made about things we know. And this also, the first peak basically gave us that this is the height, and the second peak's height, and the peak's position gives us that an important result, which is omega k is at best at a percentage level. So our universe is flat to a percentage level that we can't measure yet. And if we further go back in time, we're in the BBN era. You can understand it in two directions. You can either say that knowing that baryonic matter is 5%, we can predict the light elements abundance, like helium, is 25%. Oh, actually, historically, it's happened the other way, is that knowing the helium abundance, that actually points us to a range of values of bionic matter. Okay, so well, we should be really happy. This cosmological standard model really worked really well. It doesn't use that much parameters, and it gives us matching observation results. And we should just, you know, close our eyes and assume this works all the way back to Planck scale and leave, push all the problems to quantum gravity people. And hence, we are worried. So today our plan is basically talk about this, let's say, scheme, framework, because it's not really one model, as we might list a few. The framework is called inflation, and it's basically rapid expansion, or normally it's referred to exponential expansion. And why we're interested to this. So we'll talk about some puzzles. Some things make us worry. And then, of course, along the way, we should provide some solution. So this is a together. And then you wonder how much of this thing we need. And then you wonder, so how can we make this thing possible? And you wonder what will help us. And then you will say, oh, there are lots of bunch of models. Let's try to classify them at some for some way. So this is today's plan. We have learned this, and we are deeply worried. Why? Where is that thing to worry? What to worry is, okay, very good. The Big Bang Theory produced these photons running to us because they're cooled from the same universe. They are homogeneous. But they're a little bit way too homogeneous. So let's just first from a heuristic argument, which is good argument. So I think I draw this before. And then this is us in the center. And there is a photon over here, travel basically the rest of the universe, let's say 13.5 billion years. And then there is another photon over here, all a patch of photons, with exactly opposite direction. So one direction is that, and one direction is like from the other side of the globe. And that's the two patch of sky we're watching. As they say, it's that temperature all over the sky. So for me, I can certainly take this two opposite patch. Okay. So this photon takes that many years, that photon takes that many years just to get detected. And how long they have existed? They have existed 380,000 years. That's the age of the universe when they left the last scattering surface. So somehow, in their life, in their short life compared to this, in their short life of 380,000 years, they managed to connect with each other somehow, even if after that they need 27 billion years. There is some like 27 billion years of time between them. Oh, they each have to travel this long. And this guy is we imagine that the reason that this universe is so homogeneous must because 380,000 years ago, at the beginning of the Big Bang, they were causal connected somehow. But it's hard to imagine these two things are causal connected. Actually, we can calculate. We mentioned the other day, actually, compared to CMB. So let's actually calculate if this photon actually traveled along the last scattering surface, how much this angle is. I'll do the most hand-wavy estimate ever, just to get some number out of it. Says, okay, this photon used to be here, and he spent his entire life. Oh, let's say, what is the furthest photon it has a chance to get connected to? Okay? And then, as an observer, you want to say how big that patch is. Then from that, you can have slightly better picture than this, than how severe this problem is. So if it's just, this patch, this hemisphere and that hemisphere, maybe the universe just started with the initial condition that the two causally disconnected patches started with the same temperature. But let's see how severe this problem is. So we are trying to calculate how far could this photon traveled with the 380,000 years, which is often known as the horizon distance of that photon. And the other result is, of course, the horizon difference of us. So this angle, since, okay, we'll assume it is small, so I don't have to worry about, whatever, how that angle is actually defined. I'll just use this divided by the hypotenuse. So it's the opposite, depending whatever the h. And then the opposite is basically how horizon distance is at 380,000 years. So a fun fact, which is not hard to calculate it at all, is that you can calculate the horizon distance. It happens to be proportional to this age of the universe, with the proportional constant depend on which sort of fluid are we talking about, like the doublet. So I'll elaborate why. So I'm supposed to multiply a constant. I'm claiming that the horizon distance is basically use the age multiplied by the speed of light, you get 380,000 light years and some constant. It's like you might heard of, we have a 14 billion year universe, but the horizon distance is like at 45 billion years. There is a factor. And that factor really just coming from doing a integral. Okay, I can write down the integral. So what we're doing is that the taking the conformal time, which is our favorite, because it says light travel along geodesic that is 45 degrees. So the horizon distance is the same as the conformal time, which combine this two gives you dt. So basically you say tau is a integral of dt over at from sometime, say zero to today. And since a of t is basically t to the 2/3 from matter dominated universe, you can just plug it in and then you say that this constant is like 3. And at this point, it's well into the matter domination era. So I can take this factor to be the same. So basically, I'm going to really just write 30.5 billion light years times 3. So that's the horizon issue ratio. The only difference I need to take care of is that suppose this patch of sky is this big, but now we are viewing it today, and during this time, the universe expanded by a factor of about 1,000. So that's the redshift factor of this patch of horizon at today. So basically, we're looking at today, so we should have used today's value divided by today's value. And since this horizon distance is calculated at 380,000 years, we should let this expand because the whole universe is expanding. So there is a factor of 1,000. So if I cancel this thing and call it 0.4 million, so it's basically 0.4 billion years divided by 13.5. And now I just say this is a radian, so I should divide it by pi, multiply 180. You know, 4 and 3.14, it's basically the same, so I get a factor of 10. And this is 18, so it's about a 1. So that's the most, the pin on paper, ignoring a lot of factor calculation of this ratio. And of course, you can follow Daniel Bormann's calculation in his inflation lecture notes to get a more accurate number. But I'm not off by a factor of 10. This is saying that if you open your arms with 1 degree, which is very hard, and point to the sky and draw a circle. That's basically how big you expect the uniformity, the homogeneous should be. And how big this is? Basically, tonight, if we have a cloudy night, you look at the moon, that's basically that big. The moon is slightly bigger. So every little sky that is the size of the moon is the only thing we should have expected to be homogeneous.
Sorry, so you expect this photon to have lived within that region all of his, like, 380 years of existence? That's it?
No, it's more like I expect this photon should be at most causally collected with this distance away at that point, at the point of 380,000 years. But afterwards, they all decouple. So afterwards, they have no chance to interact. Before, they can, at best, travel that far. Right? After them, they're just free screaming to us. They definitely have no chance of thermalizing with anybody after the CMB is released. They need to, if they ever want to thermalize, which is either make everybody have the same temperature, they'd better done it before everything decouples. So now is the question, how many patches do we have in our sky? 1 degree, it's about 10 to the 4. You can just calculate the solid angle divided by whatever this spans. So we have 10 to the 4 distinct causally disconnected patches. And we should have expected that many different temperature, because they never have met each other. You know, if they have thermalized, okay, we're all in the same thermal bus, of course we're the same temperature, but they have never have a chance. So if they each elect a representative, they are all far away from each other, they have never mixed. So this is known as the horizon puzzle. So just allow me to draw another diagram, and we'll see if there's any hope to fix it. Well, there is. Okay, so the idea is using the let me draw a symmetric one just because it's prettier. So basically, the idea is in this tall chi coordinate system that photon travels in 45 degree angle, make as a space-time diagram much easier to draw. So I can just draw 45 degree lines as we always do in the special relativity. So let me randomly pick a point on this conformal timeline says that's today. And then this would be, say, 380,000 years, CMB. So what I have been saying is that I'm just converting that diagram onto this, is that consider photons that travel to me. Then this are the two photons separated by some distance, spatial distance, but they all have a chance to travel to me. Yeah, because they are in my past light cone. It's the same causal idea as you learned in special relativity, general relativity. If it's in my past light cone, I can see them. Okay, great news. Let's see what does this photon do. This photon says, oh, I'm able to thermalize with this little patch. So this is a way overscale drawing, but this is 380,000 years. This is 13.5 billion years. And this photon says, ha-ha, I'm able to thermalize with those photons. Ah, well, this is not really good, isn't it? So this is basically a space-time diagram of this scenario. Okay, then somebody has a brilliant idea. So let's label this axis is basically tau equals zero. The brilliant idea is that what if I just can continue these light cones, that no matter how far they separate, if I can go further enough, eventually, well, they get overlap. You're like, okay, you're making the assumption that we can push the conformal time into the negative region. Can we? We do better, because this is a pretty good solution. So let's see. So let's actually calculate that integral. That is as tall, let's just say it's from some initial tall to a certain tall. That's basically how people define things in terms of integral, right? It's always defined. So let's say third tall. So the conformal time has elapsed is equals to the conformal time at the time we want subtract the initial tall. Okay, you're like, huh? That sounds simple. Okay, so now I'm going to do a general calculation by carrying whatever those factors through. I think it's this. So w equals zero is 2/3, w equals 1/3 is 1/2, yes. Like, we know it's a power law, and we know what's radiation and matter. You can figure out the exponent without going back to do the calculation. That calculation is not hard either. Like, the Friedman equation for single component universe is not hard either. We are happy with single component because we see that then the energy density, they all go so drastically different scales that at a certain point in life of the universe, there's always something dominating except those couple points. Okay, so this is the calculation we want to do. It can't be terribly hard because it's a power law. I like power laws. Okay, so if I integrate it, I get, so I add 1 to the exponent, and then I have to divide this thing away. I'm just doing a, so if I do this derivative, this cancel, and I'll get that, and I get this. Okay, maybe I should do simple algebra to figure out what is this. This is 3w plus 3 minus 2, so that's this thing. Side note. So which means this tall initial is 1 over, let me just flip this. So this is the prefactor and the t initial to the power of this guy. Okay. Simple calculation. A power law, we know how universe behaves. We integrate and then we get that thing. This is what we get. What I define to be tall I is, of course, whatever this expression is, and choosing t to be tall I. Okay, so let's see what happens. Let's first take a look at, say, w equals 0, or 1/3, like normal things. For normal things, this is a positive, this is positive. If I take the initial time, goes to 0. And of course, the tall I goes to 0. Hence, that our upper half of this graph makes sense. It says if we have a matter-dominated universe or radiation-dominated universe, we certainly shouldn't go beyond the tau equals 0 because says tau equals 0. When ti goes to 0, you already went to the Big Bang singularity. What else can we hope? Okay, but here is something tricky, is when w is smaller than minus 1/3, let's just make sure that dark energy is the most weird thing we ever have to handle. So in this range though, So this will be negative. This is still positive, so the whole thing is negative. So we have something negative, multiply zero to some negative power. To negative power means you need to flip it, so this is infinity, and this negative means it's negative infinity. So interestingly, if you postulate anything that has a W, the equation of state parameter smaller than minus one-third, you actually successfully have pushed the conformal time beyond to the negative region beyond a zero. We just have to assume that universe is governed by that equation of state has happened before when normal things starts, because you are going from negative infinity to zero governed by this weird thing, and then you do some normal expansion, which is normal. So this is the brilliant idea leads us to figure out is that, okay, you can't just randomly say, I can go beyond zero to the negative region with this conformal time. It has a condition on the equation of state. Just to think a little bit more about this, is that I have this, and you may think I'm being silly, but I'm going to take a derivative, and I get this, but I'm going to take a second derivative. You know, it's nice if you have a power law, you just can keep taking derivatives. That. And t, who cares what the power? The point is, I calculate this thing. This thing is minus that. So I have minus whatever the first factor, I don't care. But this thing, I just calculate. The idea is, say, if we are in the normal range, the normal things, this will be smaller than zero for normal component of universe. But if I happen to be in this range where conformal time can go negative, I find simultaneously I have an accelerated universe. So sometimes you might just heard that, okay, as long as the universe is accelerating, horizon problem will be solved. And that is one way to connect those statements. And or some other way you can read up on Daniel's notes. Yeah.
I don't understand. Okay, you have like these points in the CMB that are influenced by the past light cone.
Yeah.
But what if the initial condition was the same for all the photons? Then
yeah. See, that's why people worried. We don't really want the initial condition to be the same for 10 to the 4. Patches.
Why not?
Yeah, okay. This is called the fine-tuning problem. All right. If you don't believe in horizon puzzle, so we sort of hope that, you know, the whatever this universe, or as some people might think about even more religious things that they didn't just so carefully choose, they are all the same. But yes, that could solve the problem if you say, okay, I don't care about the fine-tuning in the initial condition. They are just chosen that way. That's the thing. It's not extremely weird to choose 10 to the 4 patches to be at the same temperature. But it is weird if you choose them all be not exactly at the same temperature, but with a 10 to the minus 5 fluctuation. Right? Maybe everything is the same temperature, you can say, oh, there's a symmetry. But no, it's not. They are not exactly at the same temperature. They have this fluctuation that you have to propose, okay, the initial condition of the universe is such that they are at exactly the same temperature. But no, it's different by one part in 10 to the 6. And that's actually what inflation people are the most proud of is not quite about being able to say they have all been mixed up, so they're in thermal equilibrium, they produce the homogeneous state. It's what we're gonna see tomorrow with a big picture in the tutorial with a toy model. And on Wednesday, we will say they actually try to claim, yes, we have a mechanism to seed the inhomogeneity as well. Okay, but since you are unconvinced,
I'm still unconvinced by something, sorry.
Okay,
Even though in the tau equals zero surface, we see like this patch.
Yeah.
Isn't physical distance there like zero? I mean, that's conformal distance, right? That chi, that coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to like physical stuff, isn't that just a point? Because you have zero.
At t equals zero, basically, okay. It shouldn't be taken at tau equals zero. Let's take it at tau to the, 10 to the 90.
Okay.
Just like, that's definitely a correct point. Nobody ever trying to argue what happens at t equals zero. They're just like a teeny bit afterwards. Like, for example, if the universe's temperature is at 100 GeV, we understand everything up there pretty well. And basically that's what the people says, well, you'd better get the initial condition right there. Oh, something somewhere that we actually know the theory works.
Okay.
But then it doesn't.
Okay.
Well, okay. You are very good at not be convinced. That's very good. But there is a second puzzle. Is the flatness puzzle. This puzzle, there is also a, automatically solution. Is that you just assume the universe is flat to start with. Then there's no puzzle. But the question is, if the universe is not flat, then we have a problem, because let's take a look at our non-flat universe, which for a long time that I just didn't write, but it does have another term. And this K is the K we know, that if we don't take a zero equals one, that k is just plus one, minus one, zero. As I say, if universe is flat, then there's no puzzle. So let's look at the case that the k is basically plus minus one. And as usual, the people like to use this critical density, which is basically describe the, if our rho is exactly equals to this number, no curvature, everybody is happy. Things done. But let's assume it's not. We're just defining this to write things in an easier way. So this is basically our omega parameter. And there's, I'll just put x absolute value so that I don't mess up with some signs. It's always a good way to do it. Okay, so I just divide h square and move the one and the rho divided by rho crit together, and the other side defines curvature. So here, in a regular universe, as the matter-dominated universe, we have, as we just say, decelerating. So that's normal universe, we have a deceleration, which means a dot goes up. Huh. So if you look at this question, this equation carefully, that basically it says how much we deviated from the critical density is equals to a number, basically that's one, if the universe is not flat. And divided by a dot square. So this thing goes up means the deviation, let's call it the non-flatness. It's basically omega k to some extent is going to go down. Yeah, it's just this multiply that is one. So if this goes up, I'm talking about decelerating universe. So this goes up. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay, for a decelerating universe, a dot is going down and this is going up. That makes sense? And we know this number is about 0.01 today, and it has been going up ever since the universe starts. This time, we don't even need to go that far back that when you begin, like, I don't trust your calculation, you just need to go back to BBN. You realize in order for us not to detect any curvature of the universe, if the universe, the curvature is hidden by the systematical error of the observation, we need 10 to the minus 31 to start with. At a BBN, even, you don't have to go further. So that's one. So this, we know that during this time, our model works really well, except we assume that the non-flatness is to the factor of 10 to the minus 31, so that today we can't detect any curvature. And as I said, of course, if you just assume the universe is flat, then there is no problem. But if there is any, so it says that the flat is completely not stable at all. If you have anything that has any deviation at all when universe starts, now we should say huge amount of things going on because that thing. And of course, the solution is, let's look at the accelerating universe. It reverses things. It says a dot is going up, this thing is going down. So it says exactly the opposite. It says, oh, as long as we postulate this accelerating universe, that even if you start with a very dramatic amount of catch contribution from the curvature, it would actually decrease. So basically, this says it is natural that we didn't observe curvature, even if it could exist. It's guaranteed if, like, it's this period of time that the universe expanding acceleratingly, then it's basically expected. You're not going to see any curvature. And so the prediction would be, oh, you're not going to be seeing 0.01, no matter how hard you try, you're just going to not see any because they're all inflated away. Okay. Then there's another puzzle, whether the other puzzle also says you have to believe in something. For it's called the monopole puzzle. That there is all sorts of things that are postulated by the theory that claim they want to unify all the forces, well, all the forces besides gravity, and they postulate some particle, and one of them is a monopole. And the monopole is particularly interesting because it carries this single magnetic charge, we know that it's not going to decay away. And it's nice that if monopole exists, then we can even show that electric charge is quantized. It has all sort of a cute property. Of course, you know, one way to make the problem go away is, like, I don't believe in monopoles. But if you believe in monopoles, you can actually show, you do some calculation, then show that basically if the monopole were produced and there's no this crazy expansion, just normal cosmological model, then the monopole itself will be able to close the universe by 10 to the 15 more. So it itself will contribute to the density 10, 15 times the rho critical density. But, you know, inflation says, okay, I'll just make universe expand so fast and they are all away and maybe there's not even one in our observable universe, so problem solved. But, you know, I don't know. I don't like to assume things happen at the 10 to the 15 GeV that produce monopoles and such. So, and it's the same kind of argument. Okay, so here are the puzzles. And the solution, same what they share, is they want a accelerating universe in a very different way, but it's exactly the same, is they want something called this to decrease. So this is the co-moving Hubble radius. It's just 1 over a dot. So if 1 over a dot is decreasing, then a double dot is bigger than 0. So co-moving Hubble radius is basically Hubble radius is 1 over h. It's the time times c, which is 1. So still, that's basically the Hubble radius. Now you divide the scale factor away, you get this co-moving Hubble radius. So why this co-moving Hubble radius is interesting. So basically now we are drawing basically in the co-moving coordinate. And it basically says, because it's related to Hubble radius, it basically says, if you're within my co-moving Hubble radius, I will be able to communicate with you. If you're not, then I can't. So we're going to take another look at this horizon puzzle and try to figure out how much inflation we need. So the picture would be, this is today. This is today's, like basically observing universe, Hubble radius, or co-moving Hubble radius. And then we say, oh, everybody within this bubble is able to communicate with us because you are inside the horizon. And then, so the problem is that this, so for a normal universe, of course, this increases. So if I go back in time to RCMB, R hat CMB, it will be smaller. So in a normal universe, this radius increase. So back then, this bubble is definitely smaller, which is also the picture we draw there. We think that during CMB, they don't have much space. The space of the mutually communication is smaller than today. And the idea is that what if long time before the normal universe starts, we have the inflation universe, and this is the beginning of inflation universe that has our today's bubble inside it. So the idea is if you can squeeze the entire observable universe today, at this, make sure that it's inside some Hubble radius far, far away somewhere here, then we'll be good. Yeah, we just need back then at the very beginning, immediately after the t equals 0 singularity, that at some point, I need my co-moving Hubble radius to be big enough to contain the entire today's observable universe. Now, who cares about, you know, today's universe that is not observable? As long as the measurement I did, that those patches of sky all fit in this gigantic bubble, they are able to communicate precisely during this inflationary era, then we'll be fine. That will agree with our observation. So basically, let me just change this to be the end of inflation. So basically, the idea is as universe evolve, the Hubble radius shrink, and then it expand again. And And this is the inflation proposal. And this is the normal expansion. And of course, how much, then we can say how much inflation we need is basically, it's sort of like the normal expansion creates the problem. We just need the inflation to undo that problem. Or actually, the inflation actually happens first. We just need the inflation shrink more than it could, the universe could expand afterwards. So that the starting bubble is huge and we can fit the entire observable universe today there. So this is saying that the whole moving radius of the beginning initial of the inflationary universe should be bigger than today. That's how things can be causally connected. And that's using that expression is similar to say that AH measured at the beginning of the inflation should be smaller than today. So let's use A0, H0. So that's the amount of inflation that we need. And so let's do some calculation. Say how much damage has been done by calculating at the end of inflation compared to today. So we're calculating this ratio, this and this. So that's the amount of damage that the expansion has done, and the inflation wants to be at least at the same level, or maybe even more is better. So let's calculate that, which again is given by AL0H, AEHE. Yep. Okay. Now I'm going to postulate the things that might seem interesting to you is that I'm going to take this universe to be radiation dominated. And you're like, that's weird. Radiation dominated only lasts for 60,000 years. The rest are all matter dominated. But here's the argument. We're calculating basically the ratio of scale factor. We know exactly this ratio of scale factor for matter domination. It's given by the matter radiation equality, which happens at redshift about 3500. So previously, you can think about if you extend all your scale factor all the way back to say grand unification scale, like God scale, like 10 to the 15 GeV, yeah, that scale factor can be really, really small. So the correct calculation would be do this calculation, backtrack to matter radiation equality, and then from there go to wherever you think that our theory, any theory still works. But that little part is like, something can be sort of ignored. Or if you use radiation, you're not going to be off by that much. Okay, with that assumption explained, so now we can do calculation with this H, and which is just 1 over A squared. So this is A0 AE squared, AE A0 squared. And it's end of inflation over today, and it's today's temperature over the end of inflation. So this is just basically to your taste, but today's temperature is something like 10 to the minus 4 electrovolts. We can take it to 10 to the minus 3. It's more like 10. Okay, then the other temperature, when do you want inflation to end? That's to your taste. That's why it's going to give you a number, but people don't agree on that number, except it doesn't matter that much. So people typically, for the particle physicists, they insist there's a grand unification happens at 10 to the 15 TeV, but you could, GeV, you could just say, okay, I only know the physics as well as 1 TeV, which 10 TeV, which is the collider scale. Now you can just put 10 TeV there. But the point is this number is 10 to the minus, okay, 15 plus 4 plus 9 plus 4, 28. And normally it's always expressed as e to the minus something, because we love natural numbers. Of course, if you change this to be much lower energy, it will be, you know. So basically, that number should be at least the 30-ish. The most conservable people says, oh, I think the, you know, the all your theory completely break right at 10 TeV that we're going to discover next year. Even if you are that conservative, if you want to shrink our entire universe back into this big, this inflation picture, you need about a 30. So this number seems to be very interesting, and they are defined to be called the number of E folds. Then this E is coming from here. And this is saying we need around 60, if it depends on who you ask. But some people may be 30 to 60 E folds of inflation. So that's, of course, if you plug in that number in, it will give you 64. So E folds is nothing but the natural log of the scale factor ratio. It just basically describes how much expand. As you say, it might be inconvenient to do calculation with scale factor 10 to the minus 21, 10 to the minus 24. It's just make this into a good number, like 60-ish. So this is how much we need. And then, where is, okay, how much? Condition? Oh, okay. Condition is that we want this thing, which is called the co-moving Hubble radius, we want it to decrease. So you just say, poof, smaller than zero. And if you work this out, it's not a terrible one. But apparently I can't do it. A minus A dot H minus A H dot. But then there's more H coming out of play. A square H square A dot H. I'll worry about that minus sign later, so you cancel H. And then that's H, so it's like 1/1. And the second term is something like A. H square. So then you cancel A and you get this. I can take 1/A out. It's okay. I'll only do this once because I don't feel like this thing is enlightening. But the point is, people normally just define this with a negative sign for some reason, and they say, if epsilon is smaller than 1, then this is still positive, so the whole thing is still negative. So this is the one of the inflation condition. And this is basically, so you can write it in a slightly different way. Says that it's dH, dt, and h, and another h. And you realize this thing actually combined to give dn. That's not terribly hard. You see dn it's a log, so it's A over A dot. But the point is, the way to say people say these things is that you define a fractionally change of the Hubble parameter per effort. So that's the change of Hubble parameter per effort. And this is the fractional change of the Hubble parameter per effort. Basically, it tells you how fast the Hubble parameter change, which of course is relevant because Hubble has a dot in it, and we have been like saying for our whole class that we need an accelerating universe. So the relevant thing to look is, of course, the acceleration somehow. And then they say if this is small, then yes, we have a co-moving Hubble radius that's decreasing. And then you can just define this thing in the very analogous way, says that what if I look at the fractional change of this epsilon parameter per effort. It basically says 60 effort basically means we want the A to change by that much. It's 10 to the 28. It's not a small number, and you don't have much time to do it. Like, we know what happens after like 1 second. So you got a very small fractional of a second, maybe 10 to the minus 10 to do it. And then the idea is that it would be screw the whole thing up if you want the 60 EFOs inflation if this epsilon doesn't remain small. So you have to put a condition such that the epsilon is small so that it will accelerate a bit. But then you want the eta also small so that it will keep accelerating until we reach our goal of 10 to the 27 or e to the sixth. Then I can just blah blah. What can give us this? Well, that we already know. We just want that something has a very weird equation of state. Can it be, you know, omega equals minus one? Probably not. You just get, exponential de Sitter space. You can't, because you want an inflation somehow gave us today's universe. If it just has been de Sitter expansion, the whole thing, then it's not gonna give us today. Then you could have a tunneling, but Ruth is gonna talk about it. But the universe that expands with a constant Hubble parameter doesn't agree with our universe. So you just need that thing, have that weird equation of state, which is our topic tomorrow. And for models, there are lots of models, of course. People says, let's use Higgs. And then there's lots of people says, well, Higgs doesn't work. And then there are people says, so basically you can do like a two parts, like category. It can be large field inflation or small field inflation. You can inflate it with one field, multiple field. You can inflate it with a canonical kinetic term or non-canonical kinetic term. And there's just so many of them. And we'll come back to criticize on inflation after I propagated it first. But tomorrow's topic will be that look at what exactly can provide a equation of state like that, which is also known as the single field slow roll inflation. And I'll try my best to give the big picture how could inflation seed the inhomogeneity. And I will do some calculation in the tutorial. And on Wednesday, I'll wave my hands very hard to say that the inhomogeneity can be seed, because Kendrick, the expert on this, will give spend about a whole week to explain why the inhomogeneity is seeded and the related interesting topic. So I don't have to do it.